CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Midwest flooding, the likes of which haven't been seen in 15 years. Iowa is awash. 83 out of 99 counties are flood disaster areas. That doesn't mean the other 16 are dry either. In Illinois, Emergency Management Director Andrew Velasquez.
The governor declared 15 counties as state disaster areas. Lake County was one of those counties. There are a lot of sandbagging efforts going on over there in those particular areas as waters are coming in from the Wisconsin side.
The worst may not have been seen yet. The Mississippi River hasn't crested and won't for a few more days. Here are a couple of farmers.
90% of our wheat crop, 50% of our milk production on our cows.
Right now we're estimating about $500,000 to $600,000 of just loss of inventory and cleanup.
The ripple effects extend to dairy products, bread, and especially corn-fed poultry and beef.
If we get a serious hit to the corn crop, which surely we will, then, you know, it's likely we're going to see beef prices rising, perhaps 5%, 10%.
CBS's Randall Pinkston there. Thousands of Northern Californians are going home to look at the damage near paradise after wildfires that chased them from their homes have been corralled. Improved weather made a big difference for the fire crews. Astonishing to him, says John McCain, that despite the obvious success of the troop surge in Iraq, Barack Obama can't or won't see it. It's a key, says McCain, to the difference in their military approach and experience.
There's no doubt that the surge has succeeded, and we will be able, over time, to withdraw and come home with honor and victory, not in defeat.
As for Barack Obama, on this Father's Day, he preached a little on fatherhood to black men at Apostolic Church of God in Chicago today.
Any fool can have a child. That doesn't make you a father. It's the courage to raise a child that makes you a father.
The search for a running mate this election cycle looms large for both parties for very different reasons.
Louisiana's young new governor's only been on the job a few months, but already finds his name being kicked around as a potential running mate for Republican John McCain. Bobby Jindal says he's flattered but has the job he wants.
I'm certainly supporting Senator McCain. We'll do whatever I can. I'm focused on being governor of Louisiana.
That said, and given his policy disagreements with Barack Obama, Jindal also says,
we've got two candidates that are good, decent people. I think the American people can go in November and vote for one without voting against the other.
Jindal is of Asian Indian background and says he dislikes the notion of so-called identity politics. Tom Foti, CBS News, Washington.
It'll be 6 years in prison for a 42-year-old man near Tacoma, Washington, for blowing up a police car with a pipe bomb. He did it as revenge for a drug conviction, still upset with the cops who arrested him. No officers were hurt, just the car. The federal judge who sentenced him said it sure wasn't smart. He went from misdemeanor state charges to federal felonies. This is CBS News.
Linda, please, could you make some more copy paper up here?
Up here? Just look on the shelf over the copier.
Oh, thank you.
Linda, my phone's broken. Can you cast some sort of spell to fix it?
It was just unplugged.
Oh my gosh, you're a wizard.
Hey, Linda, can you work your magic on this paper jam?
Can you help me win this lottery scratch-off game?
Okay. Linda, my cat's sick. Can you heal her?
I am an office manager. All I did was take our empty HP-compatible ink cartridges
and you turned them into money. We know.
Yeah.
No. I took them to Staples and got $15 back in rewards.
She went to Staples and they paid her rewards. Now that's power.
It's not magic. Just recycle your Office Depot, Office Max, or other store-brand HP-compatible ink or toner cartridges at Staples. Purchase $25 of HP original cartridges and get $15 back in Staples rewards. Not member, join today. It's free. Staples. That was easy. Limit 2 recycled cartridges per rewards account. Limited time offer valid in U.S. stores only.
I have cash loungeophobia, or fear of money just sitting there. When Bank of the West offered Best of the West checking, I knew I'd be okay. With it, I earn interest, with no monthly service charge. That's great for my lunar monetary phobia, fear of monthly fees.
Open Best of the West checking with direct deposit today at Bank of the West. You'll earn 2.00 annual percentage yield guaranteed to October 31st, 2008 with no minimum balance required. Add a debit card and you'll also get a free Best of the West discovery guide from the creators of Sunset Magazine. Plus, you could win one of five fabulous getaways.
That'll help my not-at-lastia-phobia.
Huh?
Fear of traveling without a guidebook.
Bank of the West, member FDIC, limited time offer, conditions and restrictions apply. Sweepstakes ends on June 30th, 2008. No purchase or account necessary to enter. Sweepstakes not available in all states and some restrictions apply. See branch or visit bankofthewest.com/bestofthewest for official rules and details, including prize values and estimated odds of winning. Travel must be completed by May 31st, 2009. Void where prohibited.
This is News Talk 580 KMJ Fresno.
Welcome to Hometown Heroes. Happy Father's Day to all you dads out there. I know that it's a very meaningful day for you and also for your children. Makes me think about my late father and my late grandfather who just passed away. And I'm excited today to have as my guest someone who reminds me a lot of my grandfather, has kind of that same lust for life and maybe even over the top, that zeal that strikes you when you meet this young man. He also, like my grandfather, grew up in Chicago, and he got a pretty good taste of Al Capone when he was in control. He's got some wonderful stories for us, the time that he spent as a prisoner of war in Europe. Time before that was pretty exciting for him, too, and he stayed in the service long after World War II, had some very interesting experiences as a bombardier. My guest today is Pete Komlinich. They used to know him as the Silver Fox. And Pete, I know you don't count your age in years, but you're going to be 95 the day before 4th of July. How do you keep it looking as young as you do?
Lord, I've had angels on my shoulders, Paul, and I just keep taking care of myself. My neighbors won't do it for me. You got to do it yourself. I've been fortunate.
Well, and those who know you are very fortunate to call you a friend. Let's talk about growing up in Chicago. That was not a pretty place during the Depression and even before that. And you got caught up in some gangs there in Chicago, right?
Well, yes. Well, you had to be in a gang or you couldn't survive. Each neighborhood had its own gang. And to get from one gang to the other sometime alone, you have to pay a nickel or a pencil or whatever to get through. I used to do that when I used to go to Lane Tech when I was going to aviation school, about half a mile from Lane Tech. I went through an Italian neighborhood. And I used to pay a small price, like a pencil or a nickel or whatever, until they got to know me. And then they let me go through.
Now, and I get to this because I think it paints a pretty good background for your service in World War II. And on this show every week, we visit with Valley veterans of World War II, and that's what we'll spend most of our time on, is your experiences during the war. But you had some pretty colorful experiences long before the war ever happened. I remember the first time I met you and interviewed you for TV, you described having to escape from Chicago when you were 16. Not too many people talk about escaping, but I guess with as vicious as that gang climate was, that's what you felt like you had to do?
It was a way of life then. And I escaped when I went on a road riding the rails with a buddy of mine. We rode the rails for about 2 years, all mostly west of the Mississippi. I never cared to go east. We used to go to the Canadian border, to the Pacific Ocean, down as far as the southern part of Nevada and Wyoming.
When you say ride the rails, you're not talking about buying a ticket and handing it to the guy who walks around collecting them.
I know. In those days, they had slower freights, and you could catch them when they left the marshalling yard. Now the diesel are too fast. And if you got caught in a marshalling yard, you got 30 days automatic hard labor. So we used to wait outside the marshalling yard till the bulls, they call them bulls, got off the train, off the freight, and we'd catch them then until the next. You had to get off before the next marshalling yard if you were going to spend the night somewhere.
Did this seem like an adventure to you, this life of a hobo, or was it something that you're just trying to survive?
Well, do you know what a hobo is? A hobo is a contraction of hoboy. The turn of the century, these itinerant farmers used to go from state to state with a hoe, mm-hmm. and they'd let them ride the empties, and they contracted the hobo. A hobo was the knight of the road. He never took a dime in wages until he was able to send it home. Whenever he worked, he sent it home, because if you had any money on the road, you're a dead man.
Mm-hmm.
But my buddy and I just worked for food. We never took a dime, because if you had it, I had 50 cents in my shoe. But my buddy and I were the ones who knew about this.
You did that for 2 years, which I think
approximately
is pretty...
2 years, yes.
What did you get out of that? What did that teach you about life?
About 8 years of Harvard, let's put it this way. You learn to exist, and you learn that there is a good and bad world out there. It's how you make it yourself. And I met a lot of nice people. In fact, one wealthy retired, he was a gold mine executive. He had retired, and he had a big mansion. My buddy and I stopped there for a few hours, and they let us pick cherries. And when I told him I was an orphan, he wanted to adopt me because they didn't have any children. And I felt so bad. I still feel bad about that I lied to him and his lovely wife.
I could see how that would give you a little bit of a guilt trip.
It did. But when we get the cherries picked, they let us keep them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had all kinds of chairs. They gave us a sit-down breakfast that I don't think I've had one like that since. Beautiful layout they had.
Seems like you would get a pretty good sense of people's character and the amount of compassion that they have.
This is why, Paul, I'm trying to pay back. I need a lot more years to pay back for the good things that happened in my life.
Well, and you'd have a lot of things happen in your life. Let's fast forward a little bit to the time that World War II hits. And now your brother, I believe, was a paratrooper and ended up missing in action?
Well, we didn't know where he was, but he got hurt pretty bad. In Iwo Jima, I think it was. And I asked my mother to let me take a look at his birth certificate, because I was 2 years too old to get in the Air Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to be under 26, and I was almost 28. And how the good Lord made it happen, I was married. I had a 5-year-old daughter. I was a 3A, never finished high school. And all those things I overcame some way, and I got in the Air Corps.
So basically, there was no way you should have ended up in the Air Corps.
No.
But because you borrowed your brother's birth certificate.
Thank you.
And how were you able to do that, your brother's birth certificate? Because it was in a different language, right?
Well, it was in Montenegrin language. The only difference, well, we discussed before, he had an N and I had an L in my right. Middle of my name, because L is like an N in the Montenegrin language. And unless you knew the language, you wouldn't be able to discover that.
So in other words, you pulled a fast one on Uncle Sam.
Well, I wouldn't call it a fast one. I wanted to get in the fray, you know, because I didn't feel with my brother, he had gone somewhere, you know, the Marines had it rough in Iwo Jima on Okinawa. I wanted to get in.
Mm-hmm. So get in you did, and you wanted to become a pilot.
I was a pilot. I almost got through until I busted both eardrums doing a two-turn spin one day. It was against rules to do that. I was flying solo. And both ears went. I had a cold that morning. It was in Enid, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just getting my solo time in. But to turn out to be the best thing ever happened to me, Paul.
Instead, you became a bombardier.
I was in 6 cadet classes.
Mm-hmm.
No one ever got beyond the second one. And now that I had a good test pilot check me out on my final mission. Washed me out, but he told the board that I should stay in as a cadet, get my ears taken care of, and stay in as a navigator or a bombardier. Navigators didn't have any room because very few people wanted to be bombardiers.
Mm-hmm.
That there was plenty of room for bombardiers because there where all the responsibility lay.
Sure. And that's a lot of weight on yourself mentally to think about what you're dropping.
Yeah, the bombardier took over the aircraft from the initial point, they call it the IP,
right,
to the bomb run.
Right. But you didn't have a problem with that. You were ready to go.
I had the best eyesight in the world, even though I have an aberration. I used to work out with the Cubs with a guy named Phil Cabrera.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a foul ball one time and caught me right between the eyes, and I got a dead spot to this day. I got in here, I have an x-ray of it that was in my portfolio.
And before long, they were ready to send you off with a B-24 crew. You were the bombardier on that crew. And by the time your 13th mission came around, that would turn out to be your last mission. But between that first mission and the 13th, you had some pretty crazy experiences too. Talk to me about this Ascension Island. What they used to call there the clinker. It was just a massive...
No, they call it something worse than that.
Right, I left a word out there.
Okay, we won't... It was English controlled. And if you...
And this was between Brazil and Africa, right?
Somewhere in there, yeah. From Natal or... I forget what Natal or the other in Belém. One of those two was a takeoff point. And if you followed a hand... sent signal, you'd be out in the ocean somewhere. You'd run out of fuel, like two B-26s did. It had to be an automatic signal emanating from Ascension Island. But we didn't need that. We hit the island. I had a good navigator, and I gave him sun shots. We hit the island right dead center.
But you were pretty nervous for a while because you had to fly through some pretty bad weather and couldn't see, right?
No, that was after we left it. going into Robert's Field in Africa.
Oh, that was from Ascension Island
from
to
Ascension
Africa.
Ascension Island. We got lost. We got in some bad storms about 15 minutes after we left Ascension. We were in it for about maybe 4 or 5 hours. We didn't know within 1,000 miles where we were.
And I got the sense that this was the first time that you started thinking, wow, this could be it for us. What did I get myself into here? We don't know where we're going. We don't know where land is.
Well, I didn't think that way.
You weren't that. You never get scared, I guess.
No, it wasn't that. You see, you had something happening, and you had to find a way of overcoming it.
Mm-hmm.
We did see a ship down below.
Now, you're flying through basically blind conditions,
blind
right?
conditions, and we couldn't get above 10,000 feet. We had no oxygen. See, we were going into a combat area. When we left Florida, we didn't have any oxygen to get above 10,000 feet. And I really don't know how high the storm was. We couldn't get over it, and we couldn't get under it anywhere. The waves were maybe 30 feet high. We did see a ship. We took a quick boat to land alongside of it. Good thing we didn't find it.
You were just going to bail in the water.
We were going to set the thing down. We didn't know what flag it flew. We were going to set down right by the ship. But we just wasted 15, 20 precious minutes. And if you got south and east of Robert's Field, of the western part of Africa, the most shark-infested place in the world, I think, right there below the hump.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was afraid of more than anything. I put had an extra pellet of shark repellent with me.
So you were thinking, I'm going to be in the water trying to swim away from sharks.
Well, you couldn't swim away from them. Yeah.
You got to hide.
We had dinghies. We had dinghies. We had them all set.
Mm-hmm.
And I put an extra bag of pellet of that repellent in my under my flight suit.
But just before you thought you might end up in the water, tell us what happened, how that day came to a close.
Well, I saw this little opening in the clouds and green stuff, and I told the crew, I said, hey, I think we're somewhere in Africa. We didn't know where we were. I told the co-pilot, Fleener, he was flying the airplane at the time, I said, dive right now. I see a hole in the clouds with some green stuff. And no one believed me until we broke out, and they all started yelling in the back. I said, my gunners and everybody. And we're ready to set down in the clearing up ahead of us, off to the right, just maybe about a mile or so, is an opening. So we headed for that, Paul, and how the good Lord works. It was a chain link runway.
What are the odds of that?
That's why I wrote that story, God Was Our Navigator. And we landed right now, and we taxied up to the end of it, and there was a little revetment off to the side. And we cut the engine and all got out on our knees and kissed Mother Africa and thanked the good Lord.
Well, and that was your first close call where someone was looking out for you, like
you said.
Oh, my
goodness. How would that happen? you can't explain it.
Well, and I hope we gave the listeners a pretty good picture of how you were flying blind and somehow found the destination point.
In that three-wing binder, that first page, I mentioned who reads it to put themselves in our place at those times, under those conditions. Otherwise, mm-hmm. they won't get much out of the war stories.
Well, we're going to try to put ourselves in your shoes a little bit more after this first commercial break. Pete Komlenich is our guest today, World War II veteran who served long after World War II, spent some time as a prisoner of war. We'll discuss that. You've heard about his first close call, and he has many more to come. And he mentions this three-ring binder. If you ever run into Pete, you might get a copy of this three-ring binder that has so many of his life experiences. He's done a great job of preserving the history of his life for his family. We'll be right back with more Hometown Heroes here on News Talk 580 KMJ.
This is Fresno State Athletics. 425 student athletes achieving in the classroom, community, and winning championships. Nearly 50% of student athletes receiving a 3.0 or higher in the classroom. Thousands of hours of giving back to people in the Valley. Humanitarian Bowl winners. And preseason football top 25 ranking. Women's basketball WAC champs. And an NCAA appearance. Equestrian ranked 8th in the nation. women's tennis WAC champs and doubles team ranked second in the nation, women's golf WAC champs and an NCAA appearance, softball's 27th consecutive NCAA appearance, track and field NCAA qualifiers, baseball WAC champs and college World Series participants, 425 strong. This is Fresno State Athletics. For more, log on to GoBulldogs.com. Go Dogs! What would it take for you to try a new diet supplement?
If it worked without making me jittery.
If it was truly different and not some gimmick.
I don't like feeling hungry and irritable. I really don't.
I don't want to look flabby or be tired.
Great news, America. We asked and you told us. And the result is Hydroxadrine, a brand new stimulant-free diet supplement that combines four, yes, four, powerful formulations to fight food cravings, burn fat, and enhance mood and energy. So not only will you look great, but you'll feel great. In fact, we're so confident that you'll lose the weight you want to lose without cravings and without feeling tired and depressed that we're making available an unprecedented risk-free 30-day trial. Finally, a diet supplement made especially for you. Call 1-888-690-8257. That's 1-888-690-8257. Call now, 1-888-690-8257. Again, 1-888-690-8257.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes on this Father's Day. I hope that you take the time to let your father know how much you appreciate him if he's still around. And there are so many of us who wouldn't be here if our fathers or grandfathers had not made it home from World War II. Pete Komlenich made it home from the war. We're thankful that he is our guest today. We talked about the first close call that he had in the military. Of course, he had plenty as a hobo riding the rails for 2 years before he ever started working for Uncle Sam. But we talked about how he made it across to Africa in that B-24 despite the horrible weather conditions. And from then on, you'd have some missions. There are several missions where your bombers were escorted by the Tuskegee Airmen and those red-tailed P-51s, and I know that you're very thankful to them to this day. But there was a mission where signals got crossed a little bit, and your pack of B-24s didn't have an escort. I believe that was in December of 1943, right?
28th of December, but there was a mission on the 15th, which had a lot of bearing on what happened on the 28th.
Well, then tell us about the 15th first.
Well, on the 15th, we were briefed on a target in northern Italy to drop bombs on the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And then we left the initial point. I noted that's the IP where the bombardier takes over. I noted that the heading was about 30 degrees off. So I checked with my navigator. He verified it. So I tried to call the lead bombardier on command. It was kind of garbled because we were in enemy territory. Anyway, I told him that he was heading in the wrong direction. They either didn't get the message or ignored me, or, you know, ignored us. So I told my crew that I was holding my bombs, and after I heard the signal from the leader, bombs away, we saw them fall in a wooded area away from any military targets.
Right. Clearly wasn't the target.
No, it just a whole group, but each one of us had about 10 500-pound bombs. Anyway, when the group turned back to head for home base, we left the formation deep in enemy territory. And I could see the target clearly off about 30, 40 miles, you know, the railroad bridge and a marshalling yard. So I was fortunate enough to get to knock out the target with my 10 bombs. And I had...
How did you convince your pilot to...
He had no choice.
Because you had taken over the plane from the IP.
That's
okay.
Right.
Uh-huh.
No, that was... Well, I shouldn't say it was my decision, because the whole crew was with me. But I decided I wasn't going to drop the bombs with the leader.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the K-17 camera synchronized on the Norden bombsite. I had a beautiful Norden bombsite, very accurate. And it took the pictures of the railroad bridge being destroyed and several of the bombs hitting in the marshalling yard.
Mm-hmm.
And the tail gunner also mentioned it. That we had a shack, we'll call you that center.
Right.
So we were about 15 minutes behind the formation when we landed and going to interrogation. And when they got the K-17 camera photos, they verified our successful
You were the only plane in the formation to hit that target.
That is correct, and it saved the group from sending out another sortie the next day or, you know, a day or two later, because that was a military target, a very important one. And my crew was cited for the Distinguished Flying Cross. It got put in our records. Now, I'm going to bring it up to the 28th of December. We aborted the mission the day before, and the next day they roused us up early, an early breakfast, told them the same target, same everything, no briefing. They forgot to tell the Tuskegee flyers or the P-38 pilots that we were airborne. And word got to all the fighter bases in the German area there, and about 150 fighters hit us when we left the initial point. We never got to the target.
And you had no fighter cover
no
at
fighters,
all.
And our bomber was the first one hit because we were tailed end Charlies. And the first thing that happened was the tail gunner got killed. Knocked the tail out, and then the whole aircraft is kind of shattered. Anyway, the tail gunner was a substitute tail gunner. Our regular tail gunner, Sergeant Mills, was grounded the day before because one of the gunners shot his finger off. And he tried to shoot the book out of his hand. We got off of a rough mission in Sofia, and they went to an Italian farm, and they got wined and dined, and they weren't feeling anything when they got back to the tent about 3 o'clock in the morning.
So it turned out to be a pretty good break for him. He wasn't on this plane getting shot down.
He come to visit me at Schnoot Field. I was waiting to go back to pilot training about a year and a half ago. No finger. He had 51 missions.
But you, meanwhile, are on this plane, and you're getting shot up, and you're losing the plane. What's going on in your head at a time like that? I mean, do you think you're going to die?
No, you don't think about that, because all you're thinking about was I was calling out fighters for our gunners, and I had no response. I looked up the rudder pedals, no pilots, and they never rang, the pilot in the left seat never rang the alarm bell.
So you realize your pilot's left the plane and you're still on it.
That's three of us in the nose. I let the nose gunner out, Javorsky. He's the one that saved my life because I was off of oxygen for a while when he's...
Yeah, let's talk about that. How did that happen? You didn't even realize that you stepped on your hose or what?
No, he did.
When I let him
out of the nose turret, he couldn't get out by himself. The navigator was long gone. The navigator's responsibility. Anyway, he stepped on my oxygen hose that was in the receptacle, the oxygen tank, and I didn't realize this. And I was still calling out fighters, and then when I saw the no pilots, I grabbed the engineer who was still firing away over his top turret with the turret shot off.
Right.
And he was still firing into the wind. He did get a fighter. So I went like this, and pretty soon I tried to put that shoe down over my flak suit. I didn't know I had it on.
Mm-hmm.
And Sergeant Javorsky, the nose gunner, he pulled the tab and helped me with the chute to put on the tabs. And when I left that airplane, I was unconscious. The good Lord opened my chute somewhere about 8 or 10.
You don't remember anything from the time your oxygen ran out?
All I remember was my bride calling my name, Pete, about 8 times.
This is what you're hearing in your head.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Meanwhile, you're falling out of a B-24.
Unconscious, because I don't remember pulling the chute. And when I woke up, I got hit with my with one of the shrapnels.
Mm-hmm. In your elbow?
Yeah, pellets in my elbow. I didn't realize that. And I tried to pull the chute when I was going to hit that village. I was going to spill the chute, almost spilled it. So I let it go, and I just wound up with my chute on a chimney in the back.
You fell right onto someone's house.
Right, and I rolled up, and I hit feet first against the house.
Now, from the time you came to, while you're floating down from a B-24, your chute is already deployed.
About 8 or 10,000 feet, and I still had my oxygen mask on, and it was kind of keeping me from breathing properly. And I saw two ME-109s swinging around me, waving their wings like, hey, buddy.
The German fighter planes. And there are reports in some parts that those ME-109s would shoot guys bailing out airplanes.
That was not... The villagers killed our downed airmen. They were told this by Hitler.
These guys kind of tipped their wings to you?
That's right. They weren't shooting at us.
As a mark of respect, like they were showing you some chivalry or something?
That's right. And I forgave the pilot that shot us down years ago, but I never forgave my pilot for not ringing the alarm bell.
That is a little troubling. That's a pretty big nightmare to realize no one's flying the plane that
we were in the same room for about a year and a half, and I didn't talk to him for the first year until he confessed the second Christmas. He says he was scared.
So he was in the same POW room as you?
Yes, we wound up, he and I and a couple of our group was in the same room.
Okay, well, let's talk about that now. So you come down, you wake up halfway down, the ME-109 pilots tip their wings for you to show you that they see you, they're not going to hurt you. Then you hit the ground. What happens once you hit the ground?
A couple of padres. Well, I had to try to get a lady to come out of that house screaming with her holding her... I could see her holding her hands, you know, her ears with her hands. And I kind of motioned for her to get someone to take the chute down. So a young lad came out.
You're still stuck on their chimney.
No, I'm on the ground, but the chute's on the
right.
chimney.
Uh-huh.
And I got out of the chute.
Sure. Right?
And I gave this lad my escape kit to get that chute down. And I rolled it up and I threw it in the hallway. And next thing, a couple of padres come by. And they put me in one of those vegetable trucks, you know, that they had the sliding door.
Mm-hmm.
And just before they pulled away, a cabinary and a German soldier come by. And they saw it was there. They took me out of there. And fortunately, because they were executing downed airmen, fortunately, two Luftwaffe officers came in one of those open seat, rumble seat vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
So when they saw what was happening, they said they would take me to the hospital. So I sat on the back of the rumble seat with them, 60 miles an hour. They took me to some hospital in Italy or somewhere.
Well, that's better than them making you walk 60 miles. It happened to some guys that were shot down.
Good thing they come by when they did.
All right. Well, I know that we have a lot to cover still in this hour program. We're almost halfway done already. But Pete has much more to tell about what happened once they took him to the hospital. What about interrogation, and what was it like to live 18 months of his life as a prisoner of war, all the close calls he endured there, the exhilarating feeling of being liberated, and why he went back in the service after World War II. Hopefully we'll get answers to all those questions as Hometown Heroes continues next on News Talk 580 KMJ.
Ready,
on 580 KMJ, this is a WAC Commissioner's Cup report on Fresno State Athletics.
The Fresno State football team enters the upcoming 2008 season with plenty of hype and hope. Bulldogs finished 2007 with an impressive 40-28 win over Georgia Tech in the Rudy's Humanitarian Bowl in Boise and have been placed in the preseason top 25 by four publications for 2008. The Bulldogs will face a tough non-conference schedule featuring road games against Rutgers, UCLA, and Toledo, and a home date against Big Ten opponent Wisconsin. The Bulldogs have been picked to win the WAC this season, according to Athlon's magazine, and have been projected, along with BYU, to be serious contenders for a BCS bowl game. Tom Brandstetter, Ryan Matthews, and Marlon Moore return to an offense that scored nearly 33 points per game last year. Fresno State opens the highly anticipated 2008 season Monday, September 1st, against Rutgers.
For complete coverage of Fresno State sports, it's News Talk 580 KMJ and KMJ580.com.
As a busy executive, it wasn't until I started flying nonstop on ExpressJet Airlines that I found the time to take a stroll around the old workspace and appreciate the wonders that are the modern office. I mean, take this fax machine, for example. Totally awesome! Or this paper shredder. What's this? An electric stapler? Boy, what will they think of next? You know, if it weren't for the time I save with ExpressJet Airlines, I wouldn't be able to enjoy all this cool stuff. Ooh, what's this?
Welcome to an airline that measures travel satisfaction and the time it saves you. Because we know there are things you'd rather be doing than flying.
Hey, Steve, what am I cutting here anyway?
I believe that's payroll, sir.
This is fantastic! Look, Steve, I'm making salary cuts! Get it?
Not really.
Non-stop flights on ExpressJet Airlines. What are you waiting for?
Fly ExpressJet Airlines non-stop from Fresno to L.A., Ontario, Long Beach, and San Diego while enjoying free XM radio. Go to ExpressJet.com to book your flight today.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, where each and every Sunday afternoon we visit with Valley veterans of World War II, hoping that their stories of service and sacrifice will inspire those of us who were living about the same age they were in way back when, that it'll inspire us today to do the best that we can to serve each other and to serve our country, and certainly honor the sacrifices they made in preserving freedom for us, that we enjoy that freedom here today. Remember, if there's a veteran in your life that you'd like to tell me about, you think I ought to catch up with for this program, you can email me, paul@kmj580.com. So look forward to hearing from you. And now let's hear more from Pete Komlinich, World War II veteran who now makes his home in Merced. He talked about growing up in Chicago, riding the rails as a hobo for a couple years before he ended up in the service once he borrowed his brother's birth certificate, pretending to be him to get into the Army Air Corps. And didn't make it as a pilot, became a bombardier, shot down on his 13th mission. He left off by telling us how he became a prisoner of war. You were beat up pretty bad. You talked about shrapnel in your elbow. They took you to the hospital for treatment. And let's pick up the story there from the hospital.
Well, it was one guard that was guarding me when I was hoping the doctor would come by pretty quick because my arms real hurt me real bad. And he tried to get my wristwatch and my family ring off. I had a ring with a K on it. I still have it at home. Anyway, I started screaming for Hauptmann. And he hit me across my face with the back of his hand, you know, and I was sitting down, and I fell asleep for about maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes. And when I woke, he was lounging about 10 feet from me, and he had a rifle and his Luger on a little counter between us, and hoping that I would reach for it. So I knew probably when I saw those, I knew they were empty because he wouldn't leave them that way.
Anyway, so he was trying to trap you.
He was trying to shoot me to get my ring and my wristwatch.
And he thought that if he made you make a move for the gun, then he'd have an excuse to
probably
offer.
That's what his idea was.
Pretty smart of you to figure that out. Well, I don't know if I would have.
I was kind of hazy, and it was deep winter then, you know. The snow was
pretty. December 1943, yeah. Uh-huh. Not quite as cold as this winter of 1944, which you would still experience as a POW.
Uh-huh. I was a guest at a Gestapo, by the way, Paul. Please note that.
No POW, you were a guest.
All I had was my body. My mind was home with my 7-year-old daughter and my bride.
And that's probably what got you through.
That is what? That's right.
But you still had to be interrogated, and they took you to that infamous place in Frankfurt on the Main known as Dulag Luft. What was that like?
Very few people know it. It was one entrance there for bombardiers and Jewish American flying officers. They were executing them. And you never hear about this because when Germany capitulated, all that was rubbed off. They let me see one of the executions. Now, I don't know whether it was fake or not. I just heard the shots. I saw the body fall. You know, we did the same thing in Italy when we caught one of the Italian soldiers around our airplanes to make them talk. Anyway, I was there for, really, I don't know how long, because days and nights just didn't mean anything. It was winter, deep winter in Frankfurt,
mm-hmm.
And the days were short. And I was in a little doghouse. I couldn't stand up in it. And twice a day, they'd take me out and interrogate me. And I don't know how many times I got out of there, get interrogated, and get a name, rank, and serial number. This one handsome-looking young captain, you know, thinking he must have come out of Harvard. He knew the language much better than I did, you know. And he just got exasperated. He caught me across the mouth with the back of his fist and knocked my teeth in.
Hmm.
Didn't knock them out, knocked them in. And it was bloody, I couldn't talk. Fortunately, I didn't respond, you know, like you normally do to hit back.
Mm-hmm.
And they finally got a doctor over, and I couldn't talk, so they let me go to to another area where a lot of POWs were. They felt they couldn't get anything out of me anyway. But this other there was a captain who was a Jewish American pilot,
mm-hmm.
And he gave me his name. You know, when he found out that he was not a just faking to be an American prisoner. And he gave me a little history. He said, if he doesn't get out of there alive, for me to tell his family what happened to him.
Hmm.
I know his name is like Greenberg or Bloomberg or something like that. But I met him later in Stalag. He got out of there somewhere, but he was pretty bad hurt. When I got a glimpse of him when we were going back and forth one day.
This was not a pretty place to be.
Oh, no, it was right across from the Farben Dye Works. It was off limits to our bombers up ahead, mm-hmm. up above.
And once they decided to stop beating you up and asking you questions, They sent you off to Stalag Luft 1. And
I joined the rest of the group that was waiting outside of this particular area, this area where it had bombardiers and Jewish American flying cars. Because they blamed us for dropping those bombs and killing, they said, killing innocent people, what they told us.
So did you think you were going to be executed? Did that thought enter your mind?
Well, that was the end thought. I don't think I thought about it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I was there for. I knew that.
So it must have been quite a relief when they sent you off somewhere else.
Well, I was in the same area, but where the regular POWs were waiting to get in a box. But as we were coming in this place, we saw bodies in blue suits hanging from the lampposts.
Mm.
Now, whether it was fake or not, I didn't know, because the shades were covered so you couldn't see them from above, you know. And the dim light was down below, and it showed right on these hanging bodies. I don't know whether they were fake or not. They're just but trying to scare
it gets
us.
Your attention.
Caught our attention.
Eventually, you end up at a place where we've had actually several people on this show who were in the very same POW camp, Stalag Luft 1. You spent quite a bit of time there, longer than a year, in that facility.
Almost a year and a half.
Almost a year and a half. And one of the things that really struck me when I interviewed you on the television side is some of the things that you made while you were held there.
Mm-hmm.
You guys were pretty pretty ingenious, came up with some pretty impressive things.
Well, if you figure, we didn't have any material, we had to innovate. But, we spent several days in Berlin. I know what I told you about that. In a box, they left us in this marshalling yard during an air raid, and the English would bomb at night and the Americans by day, and we could hear the bombs falling.
So you're sitting in a 40-8, not knowing if a bomb's going to hit you.
Right in the marshalling yard.
Right.
60 of us is a 40-8, and we were singing and trying to keep our morale up. We were there 2 days and maybe 2 days and two nights or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way we'd have left that boxcar. There weren't any guards around there. They just left us. And they hitched us up to an engine and took off about maybe several hours. They stopped at a place where they had some wonderful German ladies, like a Red Cross, give us hot coffee or tea and some biscuits of some kind. And that was the first food we had in 5 days. And I never forgot that.
I imagine that sticks with you. Some of the things that you showed me that you still have from your time in Stalag Luft 1, you have bombardier wings.
Yes.
That you made out of melted down what? The bully beef cans?
Bully beef cans, they had lead to seal them.
Uh-huh.
The English got those. The English bully beef, they would save them, give them to me, and I would melt them down because I made a stove, an oven above the stove.
Mm-hmm.
So other rooms would come in to bake whatever they had to bake.
Was 90% sawdust, probably.
Well, that's the bread. They gave us the bread. It was 50% sawdust, but it was excellent.
But tree flour, as some people call it, right?
Whatever. But we had rutabagas and wormy barley and all that. And they'd bake it in our oven while we were cooking. So they give us a brick. We had six of those coals that they gave us each week. Each room had six of them.
Right.
And there's not much that, you couldn't waste any of that. So I made that oven in our stove in a pipe. And when we'd cook, we'd have someone use our oven and give us some coal. So we had ample coal, and I was able to melt the bully beef can and get the lead out, so to speak.
And you've made a couple impressive things that you still have. You also have your POW dog tag that they had assigned to you. 1991, is that the right number?
That's the one right here.
Tattooed on your arm, 1991.
This is registered in case anything happens to me. You know, I don't wear dog tags anymore.
Uh-huh.
But this is registered, so they know.
He's showing me the tattoo on his left forearm that says POW 1991. Another thing that you have that I want to talk about is your silk escape map. You, from the silk of a Royal Air Force officer's boot.
You got a good memory.
And you guys did that on silk so it wouldn't make noise, so it wouldn't rustle.
That's right.
And you have a detailed map of the whole area where you actually had an escape committee, is that right?
Yeah, oh yeah, we had A&E, we call it XYZ committee.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you didn't say escape and evasion or anything like that.
That was a dead giveaway.
Yeah.
And you really thought that you might be able to get out of there?
My buddy and I, Chuck Banks, he was my bunk buddy up above. He and I made these maps, and we made stuff. Sometimes we'd work well into the night, you know, getting color for these silk maps. Mm-hmm. The others with Russell. I have a copy of both of them. I have that silk map at home.
I've seen it. I've felt it. It's the real article.
That's the one I got caught with when I inadvertently hit a guard when the Russian women were using our...
Now, that's the story that I think our listeners are really going to like. So I'll tell you what, we're going to take a quick break here. I can't believe how fast this time is going, people. We're going to take our last commercial break, and when we come back, I'm going to have you tell that story about the map and how you almost got caught and finish things out from there. Where does all the time go? Pete Kamenich, World War II veteran, former prisoner of war, at least for 18 months. Guest of the Gestapo. I got to get that right. Sorry. We'll be back with more from Pete straight ahead as Hometown Heroes continues on News Talk 580 KMJ.
So here we are. Summer practically here, and all those triple-digit temperatures are right around the corner. And guess who's going to be out in the hot valley sun, sweating bullets, working on their lawn? You, that's who. You know why? Because you haven't been listening to me. Do I need to introduce myself again? Hello, Artificial Grass from Sinlawn. Nice to meet you. Hey, let me tell you a little about myself. I don't need any mowing, watering, weeding, or fertilizing, which should give you plenty of extra time to put a nice T-bone on the grill and throw back a tall one. No chemicals and pesticides means I get along great with the kids and pets. And no, I'm not that 70s carpet garbage. I'm lush, green, natural-looking. Don't believe me? Come see for yourself. The Sinlawn showroom is incredible. Give them a ring at 433-3375. You got that? 433-3375 or on the web at sinlawn.com. So what are you waiting for? I can't dial the phone for you. Sinlawn, taking care of your yard don't get no better than this.
Sweetheart, this is Grandma. I found the perfect one for you.
Sometimes waiting for the right person to come along can be difficult.
They're in my garden club.
That's why there's Cupid.com.
Honey, I promise. You're going to love this person. Isn't that right, Grandpa?
I don't know.
Yes, you know.
Okay.
We're Cupid.com. And to be perfectly honest, we're not exactly sure who the right person is for you. That's for you to decide.
Oh, this is so exciting. Our first date was on a Thursday. Isn't that right, Grandpa?
I don't know.
Yes, you do.
Okay.
No, we don't ask hundreds of questions about your personality. And we promise, none of us here have you figured out.
He brought flowers.
Candy.
Flowers.
All right, flowers.
We're Cupid.com. And all we want to do is help you meet people that live in your area so you can define your own chemistry. Because sometimes love is closer than you think.
Wasn't it candy?
Flowers.
Okay.
That's Cupid.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes on this Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to all you dads out there. Our guest today, Pete Kamenich, is a dad. I know it's a happy Father's Day for him, and he's going to celebrate his 95th birthday on the 3rd of July, although he says he doesn't measure his age in years. Maybe that's why he's lived so long and still acts like he's about 50 or so. Got more energy than I do, I think. And when we left off, we were talking about Pete's stint as a guest of the Gestapo.
Thank you.
He likes that, prefers that to POW, for 18 months of his life. And you talked about these escape maps that you made out of the silk from an RAF officer's boot. And now, where would you keep this on you when you were walking around the yard?
In my collar.
In your collar of your jacket?
I had a RAF jacket, Royal Air Force jacket that I got from the English pilots. And I kept it because it wouldn't rustle.
But one day you got yourself into a little hot water.
Easter of 44. I was in my room sewing up our one baseball, because baseball season coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden one of the guys come in and told me that the Russian woman used to use our showers about once a month. And several of them were hollering something in Russian, very excited. So they come to get me, and just before I got there, someone hollered, "Goon up." I mean, the guards were coming into the area. So I turned my back, and I had my baseball in my hand. All of a sudden, I got hit across the back with a rifle or something, and I turned around, and I caught this little German. He's about 5 feet tall, about 200 pounds. And I caught him across between his shoulder, around the neck somewhere, inadvertently. So he grabbed me by the collar, and my RAF jacket was hauling me off. That's why I gave him a karate chop. I didn't know what a karate chop was in those days. But one of them let loose. You did it instantly, automatically.
Sure.
And I knew I made a mistake. So then, he wanted to take us rifle off his shoulder, and all of my Krieger friends got around telling this guy to let me go. About 200 of them got around. But the guards, more guards come over, they dragged me over to the area where the commander is. And en route, I remembered that map in my collar. So I told him I had to go to the restroom. So he let me go in his place, and I had this water tower above. I had a little knife, which I used, cut that map out, and I threw it in there and flushed it. The damn thing wouldn't go down.
And you knew that if they caught you with this map, you were going to be in...
Oh, yes. They want to know how we made it, where, and everything, you know. So I got some stones there, and I put it back in, and hoping that thing would fill up again. And they were knocking on our door, you know, Mark Snell trying to get me out. And I was telling them, you know, I had to relieve myself.
You had to wrap it around a rock to try to get it to flush.
Right. I threw it in, and I don't think the water was all fully, you know, that the tank was full yet, but I pulled it again, and fortunately went out. Because next day, I got my jacket and clothes back that night, and it was all torn up.
So you would have been in pretty hot water if they had found that map.
I'd have been in deep trouble.
But by the spring of 1945... Liberation Day arrived. What do you remember about that, and how great of a feeling was it for you to realize you had that freedom back after a year and a half as a guest of the Gestapo?
Well, weeks before we took over the camp, we heard big guns, Russian guns from one side, and our planes and everything else from the west. And just before New Year's, Hitler gave the orders to the commanders to march us out 100 at a time with just what we could carry in our hands, no backpacks or anything else, to get us out of there. Well, there was no place within 50 miles that they could have taken us, you know, no camp. We knew that we were going to be executed, so we had our own plans made, and these commanders wouldn't abide by Hitler's orders.
Mm-hmm. Thank goodness they didn't.
So anyway, the Russians never took over. We took over the camp. The Russians stayed maybe a few miles from us, and so did the Americans on the other side. We took over the camp and ran it, and I ran the mess hall during that particular time, because when I was in CCCs, I had experience feeding 280 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about 16, 17 years old, so that was known, and I took over the mess hall, and I gave the Russians, it gave me... little bit when I was in the cooler for 30 days. You know, I'm bread and water every other day.
Mm-hmm.
They used to leave little bits of their food on my windowsill during the night, and a cigarette or two. And if they had got caught doing that, they'd have got shot or whatever.
But, so that's another one of those things that contributes to how generous you are with your own life today. We only have a couple minutes left in the program here, but I want to know what it felt like when you finally got back home and got to see your family again. Is that a day that for a while you never thought would come?
Oh, Lordy. Well, no, I never thought that far. Because, like I said, my mind was home with my bride and our daughter and my family.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to Fort Sheridan, I had a rifle and a blanket, and I gave the rifle to one of the sergeants who was lamenting the fact he never got overseas to get a souvenir. So I came home with a blanket and my Krieger book, and a few of those accoutrements that I had, had those hidden.
And I'm glad you did, because that's some pretty good evidence that all these stories that are so remarkable actually happened, that this is a history that we need to preserve. One more question about your family. You talked about going in after your brother had gone missing as a paratrooper. You had borrowed his gift certificate. Did you ever give it back? His birth certificate, not gift certificate. Yeah, you wouldn't want a gift certificate to Salag Luft 1. Did you ever give that birth certificate back to him?
I gave it back to him 2 years ago on his 90th birthday, and he doesn't remember this. And I don't know why, because we had a birthday party from back in Chicago. All of us from California went over there. We had a big bash on his 90th birthday. That's when I gave him the birth certificate. It was about two, three years ago.
Uh-huh. But he never knew it was missing?
No, he didn't. He forgot. Evidently, he had something to do. He doesn't drink too much, but he may have had too much. It was his birthday, 90th birthday.
I see where you're going with
and
that.
And he doesn't remember me giving it to him.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, we've got less than a minute left here, Pete. I want to give you one more chance to tell us, and I know I haven't been able to cover all the great things that you do for our Valley now and the people around you. You're such a generous guy, such a giving guy, such a lover of our country and a lover of freedom. But what keeps you going now, and why do you do the things that you do and give so freely of your time and possessions?
Well, because I feel I'm still needed by my three daughters. And a lot of the homeless, you know, sometime I'd go out and buy like 40 hamburgers at one of the places, and then I'd share one with them. And I just wish I had more money and more time to do this for more people.
Do you feel like you've been given a lot?
I've had angels on my shoulder for all my life, and I got a little deal on that, I guess, mentioning that. I don't know how many angels a person is authorized for a lifetime, but I wish I keep those angels on my shoulder.
Well, they've been good to you, and I think you've been an angel in many people's lives, and I know they're very thankful for it. I know you'll be very well appreciated on this Father's Day. And Pete, thank you for your service to our country and for the example you set for the rest of us.
Can I mention one thing?
Quickly.
Like Mother's Day, they should have 364
other days?
Father's Day, and one where the father could be kicked or the mother could be, you know, verbally bashed or something. The rest of the time, they should be loved, because one day is not enough for mothers and fathers.
Amen to that. A very good point. Pete Komlinich, our guest today, thanks so much for listening. Remember to tell me about the veteran in your life, paul at kmj580.com. That's Hometown Heroes for this week. We'll be back next week on News Talk 580 KMJ.
And so, Mr. Martin.
Marvin,
the great Wanda, who sees all and knows all, sees in her crystal ball that you are having very serious health.
No.
Personal.
No.
Business.
Yes.
Business problems.
Exactly.
All because of your sounds like banana.
Employees.
Sounds like employees.
No, it is employees. That's my business problem.
Oh, yeah?
Every month I need a new employee in some department. Sales, IT, distribution, transportation. I'm going broke with all the pricey newspaper ads.
My crystal ball is telling me CentralValleyHelpWanda.com, Martin.
Marvin.
Right. Unlike newspapers, you get unlimited words to describe the job places many jobs as you want for one low price.
Wow.
You get highly qualified local employees, and you can place the ad yourself in less than 5 minutes at CentralValleyHelpWanted.com.
Sounds like a quality operation.
They're wonderful. That'll be $125.
Maloney, anyone could have told me about them. I'm not paying you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah? What does your crystal ball say to that?
It says somebody may just tell your partner about those trips to the Caribbean.
No.
Rowdy office Christmas party.
No.
Second set of books.
How much was that again?
$125.
I'll make $150.
Thank you.
You bet.
CentralValleyHelpWanted.com. Long name, amazing results.
It's time to tee it up and think green as the Greater Fresno Area Chamber of Commerce and Fashion Fair Ball, in association with Table Mountain Casino, present the inaugural Chamber Golf Tournament Thursday, June the 19th. Spend the day swinging your clubs on the green at the beautiful Brighton Crest Golf Course, and then enjoy a delicious dinner afterwards provided by BJ's Restaurant. You can win your share of over $5,000 in high-end golf equipment and raffle prizes. Plus, six teams will take home top awards. Everyone is a winner. The weather is perfect. The time is always right for a great game of golf. Sponsorships are available by calling the Fresno Chamber or log on to FresnoChamber.com. Your help is needed to make this inaugural golf tournament an annual golf tournament for the Greater Fresno Area Chamber of Commerce. We're thinking green, aren't you?
Special thanks to Fashion Fair Mall, Table Mountain Casino, BJ's Restaurant, and Lexus for their Win a New Lexus hole-in-one sponsorship. For more information, log on to FresnoChamber.com.
I died last week, shot three times in the back. I guess you could argue I had it coming, but my mama, nah, she didn't deserve none of this. I watched her that day, at my grave. I never meant to cause that kind of pain. Yeah, I was in a gang, bad gang. Thought I was untouchable. I was just playing the fool. But my mama and my little brother, they the ones that gotta pay the price. They're the ones that gotta deal with it all. You think my gang kids? I'm gone now. Hell nah. They just gonna pull in the next stupid fool and wipe up the streets with his sorry self. Goodbye, mama. I wish I could tell you I'm sorry.
If you see gang activity or know of gang members, call the police. Together, we can save our kids. Call toll-free 1-888-498-STOP, 1-888-498-STOP, or valleycrimestoppers.org.
And now, another reason to switch to GEICO.
Instead of paying more for car insurance, you'd rather pay less. Call you crazy, but for some strange reason, you like saving money. And guess what? With things like money-saving rates, multi-car discounts, and good driver discounts, Geico's always looking for ways to lower what you pay for great car insurance. Huh. Guess you can call us crazy, too.
For a free rate quote, visit geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is the 50,000-watt information, weather, and traffic leader. Broadcasting's News Talk 580. KMJ Fresno.
The news starts now.